we're doing Ein Yaakov, which is a compilation written approximately the 15th century. And this compilation summarizes, takes from the Gemara, the stories of the Gemara, the Midrashim, the Agadot. And we're in the middle of learning Brachot. We're going to move forward a little bit in Brachot. And then I want us to take a few minutes to learn some of the Ein Yaakov on the Darim, because that's going to focus on a mitzvah which people don't give enough weight to. Historically, traditionally, it's a weakness among the Jewish people, unfortunately. So I wanted to take a few minutes to discuss that, those marot about that mitzvah. So we'll begin with moving forward a little bit in our Maran Brachot. For those listening to the recordings, I think I'll split it into two recordings to make it easier. So this we're holding in Brachot, the Chet Amud Aleph. And the Gemara had discussed that Rabbi Yochanan, who was the great rabbi in Israel, the one who compiled the Jerusalem Talmud, when he heard that there were people who had longevity in Babylon, so he wondered, he said, it says that in the merit of the performance of the mitzvah of mezuzah, we say it every morning in Shema, says, we will have longevity in the land of Israel. So he said, and what merit do they have longevity in Chutzlartz? Now in truth, this whole Gemara is a bit unclear, because there are quite a few mitzvot that our sages told us, some the Torah tells us, some our sages told us, that the merit is longevity. So what was he wondering? Maybe that other mitzvot. But at any rate, it says that Rabbi Yochanan, when he heard there were old people in Babylon, so he wondered how come they merit this blessing when the blessing is said about people who perform the mitzvah of mezuzah in the land of Israel. And when he heard that they attend shul, they come to synagogue early and they remain late, so he said that's the merit that gives them longevity. Just like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi instructed his children, come early to shul and stay late, and then you'll have longevity, you'll have a long life. We think we'll accomplish more if we come to shul a little bit later, because we just got to do one more phone call. And we leave the job earlier because we just got to catch one more thing. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi taught his children, you want longevity? Show up early to shul and leave late. Now, I think it's maybe an American thing, a Western thing, an Ashkenazi thing. I find this to be a very difficult thing to keep. I know it's one of the things I work on constantly. So one of the things I do myself is I try to have a chavruta or a seder of learning before and after davening. So if I know that I have a chavruta waiting for me 5 minutes before prayer, so I'll get there 5 minutes before prayer. If I know I still have to do something in shul, after shul, like say Tehillim, so that pushes me to stay. And also, I tell myself, this is your challenge. This is my challenge. I know that this year, this is one of the things that I'm trying to work on, because I know I find it difficult. So I also know to go to a minyan that goes the pace, that doesn't try my patience. There's no mitzvah to go to a minyan that's going to try your patience. So At the end of the day, this is something I think many people have to work on, and the Gemara teaches us that this is something that those who perform it will merit to have longevity. Now, Rav Achab, Rabbi Chaninan, asked, "What's the source for this?" And he quoted a pasuk in Mishlei that says, "Praised is the man who listens to me, who waits for me, and he's constantly by my doors day after day." So he's the one that's waiting at my doorstep. What does it mean he's waiting at my doorstep? He's there early when shul opens, and he's there late as shul is closing. He doesn't come exactly when shul begins and ends. And the verse says directly following that, and whoever finds me this way will find life as well. So the Torah, so to speak, the shul is saying, if you're there early and late, if you're there...
What if you sleep in the shul?
Nowadays we don't sleep in shul. Now Rav Chista tells us another ruling.
Shabbat.
What?
You sleep in the Shabbat in the shul, not with your home.
Okay.
Does it, the blessing comes also?
I don't know. Now we have a quote from Rav Chista. Rav Chista was a tremendous sage. He had a wonderful daughter who was married to Rava. And Rav Chista said, "Lo'olam yikanes adam shnei ptachim bebet hakneset." A person should always enter two entrances into shul. So the Gemara asks, what does that mean? Shnei ptachim sarkadai tachnik means literally walk through two doors. Ela eina shiur shnei ptachim, but rather it means you should walk the measurement of two entrances and then start praying. L'chakach yitpalel. And here there are many different understandings.
One understanding says it means don't sit right near the door. You sit next to the door, you're indicating I can't wait to get out of here. So enter the shul, a doorstep, an entrance is usually 4 amos wide. Enter 8 footsteps into shul. Don't position yourself right near the door because you're showing as you're praying that you can't wait to get out. Another understanding is that when we enter shul, we shouldn't be quick to start our prayer. We just walked in, so settle down, wait a second. You just came before your Creator. I discovered something very interesting recently. Our sages tell us that the pious people used to come 3 hours before prayer to get their mindset ready for prayer. So I always felt like that's for the pious. Okay, I can't spend 3 hours before prayer. So the halacha says, even if you can't spend 3 hours, spend a few minutes. So whenever I came to shul, I'd come a few minutes early. And one of the halacha says, so you learn or perform a mitzvah prior to prayer, and then you're in the mood. So I did that. But I always forgot the other halacha. And the halacha says, but we should try to emulate the pious and take a few seconds and think, who am I going to speak to now? Who am I standing before now? And recently, I reviewed the halacha and I said to myself, hey, I'm not doing enough if I'm coming early and I'm performing a mitzvah and I'm learning prior to prayer. I'm still not in fulfillment of this obligation to enter and pause and just stop and think, wait a second, who am I talking to now? And ever since I started doing that, I discovered that it's much easier to focus on the prayer because suddenly I'm focused on who I'm talking to. Now, the only times I'd have such clarity previously was when I went to the Kotel. You come to the Kotel, then you feel like who you're talking to. But our sages said that one should really take time when he enters shul and focus. Now, it doesn't have to be 3 hours like the pious ones of yesteryear, but it could be a few seconds. And it could be a few seconds before Shemona Esrei as well. If a person stops and thinks, then it's much easier to focus. Think about what are we saying, the first three blessings of Shemona Esrei. The first three blessings are all praise. Elokeinu, Elokei Avoseinu, Elokei Avraham. If we're not focused on who we're talking to, it's very difficult to be focused on the praise. Once we take those few seconds and we think who we're about to talk to, then it becomes much easier. So the second understanding is that Rav Chisda was instructing us, pause the time it would take you to enter 2 entrances, 8 footsteps. How long does that take? 3 seconds, 4 seconds. All Rav Chisda was saying is, don't rush into shul and into prayer. You walked in, now stop, think for a second, where are you, who are you talking to, and then start your prayer. There's a third understanding. The third understanding says that Rav Chisda is telling us a concept. A shul should not be built in a manner that the door leads to the outside. There should be an enit room, there should be a coat room, coat, whatever you want, some room that you enter before you enter shul. You should always have to enter 2 doors, so that when you, a hole, so that when you enter from the outside, you don't enter directly into shul. You enter 1 doorway, and then you enter the other doorway. So those are 3 of the understandings. There are more understandings as to what Rav Chisda said. Now the Gemara is going to focus on a verse, and the Gemara is going to give us multiple understandings in this verse, what this verse is talking about. And each understanding has its own message. David HaMelech said, if there's any word you don't understand, ask me. Don't hesitate to ask. David HaMelech said in Tehillim, Al zot yitpalel kol chasid eilecha le'et mitzo. Regarding this, all pious ones pray to you regarding the time that will find. The time of finding. The time of finding what? So that's what the Gemara is going to focus on. What time is David HaMelech talking about? He says the pious pray about the time that will find. That will find what? So the Gemara begins. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina said, Le'et mitzo, the time of finding, zo isha, that's a wife. You're searching, you're dating, you're waiting for a date, you're trying to get a date. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Matza isha, he who found a wife, matza tov, he found good. You know what good is? When you find a wife. Okay, so we see that with regard to a wife, it's referred to as finding. So when David Amel said, the pious pray for the time of finding, they're talking about finding a wife. Now, you're going to ask, well, that's good till I'm 22. After I'm married, what are the pious praying about? David Amel is talking about all the people who aren't yet married. So we'll try to get back to that. The Ma'arava in the West, now we're reading the Babylonian Talmud, so west of Babylon is Israel. So they're referring to the people in Israel. Kinasi vinishitita, when a man took on a woman. Notice marriage is called nisu'in, the uplifting. You're taking on the responsibility of someone else. You're nosei, you pick him up. Doesn't mean literally, physically. It means in a philosophical sense, in a spiritual sense, I'm taking your happiness on me. That's my responsibility now. You're taking my happiness on you. Nisu'in, marriage. In Hebrew, it's not marriage. It's nisu'in, the uplifting. Because we're each lifting the other one. In Aramaic, it's translated nasiv, to take. That's what you're doing. You're taking. Not that you're taking her freedom. You're taking responsibility to give her happiness. So when a person engages, marries a wife, amri leyachi. So he'd come the next morning and his friends would tell him, matza o motze. Are you of the people who found? Or are you of the people who are finding? What were they referring to? There are two similar verses. And one says the word found and one says finding. Matza, are you though from the people who found, as the verse says, matza isha matza tov vayafek ratzon mehashem? You found a wife, you found good, and you end up getting goodwill from God. So if you're one of those that found, it means you got a good wife. Or are you of those that are motze, that are finding, as the verse says, motze ani mal mimavet et aisha, I'm finding this woman to be more bitter than death, King Solomon said. I'm finding her to be more bitter than death. So the guy comes in, morning after the marriage, he comes to Sheva Brachas, and the guy is asking him, are you matza or motze? So, you know, when I sit at Sheva Brachas, and the chassan starts lauding his kala, saying what an amazing person she is, and how I'm happy for him, I'm happy he views it that way, but I always think to myself, you know, you don't know her yet. Give yourself 10 years, I want to hear you talking that way in 10 years. Should be talking that way, even better in 10 years. But I always feel like, how truthful is it when you just got married at the first day of Sheva Brachas? So what are they asking him? He's just married. She hasn't yet cooked a meal. And they ask him, matzah or motzeh? They don't have kids yet. And they're asking him, what kind of wife is she? So there's an explanation that many people give. I saw it quoted in one sefer, but it's a known explanation that they're asking him a very basic question in marriage. Did you find, or are you still finding? If you enter marriage and you decide, I found the one, and you stop looking at other women, you're focused on this one, you say, I found her, that's it, this is going to work, she's amazing, she's my wife, then it's going to be good. That's a continuation of the pasuk. Matzah, if you found a wife, meaning you've concluded, this is my wife, I found her, then it's going to be good. But are you motzeh? Are you of the type of people which let their doubts get the better of them? Everyone has doubts. Everyone has doubts when they're engaged, and everyone has doubts when after they're married, a day after they're married, a week after they're married, 2 years after they're married. I said this to someone last night, and it was a couple that was married 26 years, and the wife looks at me and says, and 26 years after they're married. So I said to her, I said, you know, I hope that a year after one's married, one's intelligent enough to come to the conclusion that that's not a way to live married life. You can always doubt, and then the whole marriage stinks. And that's what they're asking him. Are you still finding? Are you still inconclusive? Are you still asking yourself, is this Mrs. Right? Well, then you're going to find married life bitter. If you enter marriage and say, I found her, she's the right one, you're not looking at other people's wives, you're not looking to see if the grass outside is greener, so then matzah isha, you found the wife, then matzah tov, you found the good. They weren't asking her, how's she? They're asking, how are you? When they were asking the guy, is she a good wife? They weren't asking with regard to how she as a wife. They're asking, have you developed the attitude you're supposed to develop? And we've had quite a few classes where we called this enemy number one, public enemy number one of marriage. The first enemy of marriage is this, the gnawing thought, is she Mrs. Right? So that's what they asked him. Have you learned to be a matzah? Have you learned to be one that's found so that married life is going to be good? So that's what we discussed, that getting married is referred to as matzah isha, found a wife, and therefore when David HaMelech said the pious pray about the time of found, he's referring to the time of finding a wife. So we asked, what happens after they're married? What do the pious pray about then? So I want to share with you a thought I heard once at a Sheva Brachos, and I think it's very truthful. I quoted it to married couples, and I enjoyed hearing it quoted back to me. They forgot I quoted it. And I take it that people are married five times as long as me, and they all, they bought it, they agreed with it. There's a story that a woman who was high in the Roman aristocracy once asked one of the rabbis, "What's God doing nowadays?" So there are a few stories this way, and there are a few answers. But one of the answers that he gave is that he's matchmaking. He's marrying people off. And then she said, "Come on, that's not a big deal. I'll take 100 servants. I'll match them, and you'll see it'll work." So he said, "Go ahead, try." She took 100 servants. She matched this one with that one with this one. The next morning, they all came in with complaints. He was bruised. She was bruised. She was fed up with him. He was fed up with her. She came back and said, "You're so smart. It takes God to make two people match." So the simple understanding is God's busy making shidduchim. You know, one guy's living in England, the other guy's living in France, and God brings them together to get married. So God has to match the whole world. There are deeper understandings to this, but there's another understanding on the simple level. The more you're married, the more you'll appreciate this understanding. But right now, just hear it and retain it. People think that once they've chosen Mrs. Wright, so then in the beginning it might be a little tough, but afterwards everything's smooth sailing. Things should go well. I mean, if we're meant for one another, things go well. And the truth is that the best couples are going to have times of difficulty. There's no such thing as a couple that everything goes smoothly and every morning you wake up and you say, "Baruch Hashem, God, the greatest gift you gave me is this wife." And every morning she wakes up and says, "God, the greatest gift you gave me is this husband." There are going to be mornings when you wake up and you say, "Yeah." There are mornings when you wake up and...
I don't like you, right?
It's difficult. So that's part of marriage. There are days, weeks, months, years that are ups, and there are days, weeks, months, years that are downs. It fluctuates. It's part of marriage. Well, in order for marriage to last, we say that there's an aspect that it's unnatural, that it's miraculous. They take two people, you put them together, and he's male and she's female. Two people from different homes who have lived different lives and have different experiences and then supposed to work, we say that requires godly intervention. We say the idea of peace in a home is that God is present in the home. Just like in heaven we say the angels naturally wouldn't have peace, God makes peace between them. By the same token in the home, we say God is making peace in the home. That's why we say the Shekhinah rests in the home. The Shekhinah rests in the home has many levels. Well, on one level, the Shekhinah is imparting peace in the home. So when we say the pious pray for the wife, they're not only praying, "Let me find Mrs. Wright." They're also praying, I think, this is my understanding, "Let me recognize that she's Mrs. Wright tomorrow. God, help this marriage work tomorrow and the next day." We can never take it for granted. So I think that's one possible understanding what the pious are praying for. There are other possible understandings. So we're going back to the Pasuk. David HaMelech said, the pious pray for the time of finding. What is the time of finding? Rabbi Natan gives another understanding. Who was Rabbi Natan? He was the Tana of the last generation of Tanaim in Babylon. When Rabbi Yehuda Anasi compiled the Mishnah in Israel, Rabbi Natan HaBavli compiled the Mishnah in Babylon. There were two versions of Mishnah roaming. Yeah? So Rabbi Natan says, what's the Et Mitzvah? Well, it's probably not that Rabbi Natan, because we're dealing with Amoraim, so it's probably Rabbi Natan and Amora. Le'et mitzvah zu Torah. That's a reference to Torah. Shneimal, the Torah says, "Ki motzi, those who find me, matzah chaim, find life." So the pious, they pray to attain Torah. That's a very important point in attaining Torah. People sometimes think, either you got it or you don't. And Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days and 40 nights up in heaven and didn't get it. God kept teaching it to him and he didn't get it until he prayed and God gave it to him as a gift. And that's to teach all of us that if we don't get it, that doesn't mean we're not cut out to learn. We should pray harder and we will get it. Moshe Rabbeinu also didn't get it for 40 days and 40 nights. And he was learning from the best teacher. He wasn't learning from us. He was learning from God. And he still didn't get it. Rav Nachman Be'Yitzchak said, Le'et mitzo zu mita. That's a reference to death. They pray about their death. Shnemaz, the verse says, L'mavet totzeot. That going out is referred to, death is called going out, it's also called findings. So they pray to have a good death. Tanya Namihachi, we have another Tanoic quote in this direction that says, there were 930 forms of death that God created in the world. As the verse says, L'mavet totzeot, Tzotzot has the numerical value of 930. What's the worst death? Askara, some kind of disease. The easiest death? Neshika, that God, so to speak, gives a kiss. Askara is like Damya Kechizra Begiva de Imra, de la Chore Nishra. Vikadamri Kefitui Befi Veshet. Askira is a type of disease where one slowly but surely can't breathe. Slowly his trachea starts swelling, and eventually I think he chokes to death, something along those lines. So askira is similar to a situation where you have I don't know exactly how it works. It's similar to a situation where you have a piece of wool and you walk by a bunch of thorns and they start dragging at the wool. So that's how this person dies, that the body is deteriorating as the neshama goes out. Another understanding is that they had these ships that would travel through the ocean, and there were places where they knew that if they had anything metallic on the ship, then there was a magnetic pull and the ship would sink. So they build these ships that traveled in those areas, they'd build them with ropes, and they'd have these holes that the hole was a drop thinner than the rope, and they'd have to knock the rope into the hole, and it was hard work getting this rope into a hole that's slightly smaller than it, and that's how the knots held the pieces of wood together. The ship was held together with basically knots and holes. So that's this type of death, that it's hard to get to die, it takes a long time, and it's like getting this knot into that hole. So here, this is where people today say that Chazal were referring to the Bermuda Triangle. Well, the signs we have of the Bermuda Triangle is that the plane's compasses go crazy, and they say that they can't, that they're suddenly being pulled down. So they say that that's what Rashi over here was referring to, that they knew, they were aware of this, and that's why they built the ships this way, those ships that traveled in that area. Okay, Oshaken Oshado. So the worst death is Askira, and Askira is something difficult like these things. And Neshika, the death of Neshika, kiss, so to speak, is Damya Kemishra Benita Mechelva. It's like pulling a hair out of milk. Comes out smoothly, so too a person dies, 1, 2, 3.
Well, Moshe and Aaron died like that.
Okay. Rabbi Yochanan says, Le'et mitzor, David HaMelech was telling us the pious pray for the time of finding Zokvua. That's a reference to their burial. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chanina said, Me'ekra, what's the source for that? Asmechim le'gil yasisu kimtzu kaver. They're happy when they find a good burial plot. So, that's what Rabbi Barav Shela said. That's what people always say. A person has to pray that things should be peaceful even till the last clod of earth is dumped on his grave. We pray for tomorrow. We pray for the year that things should go well. Business should go well tomorrow. Our sages taught us we're supposed to be long-sighted. We're supposed to pray not only for today and tomorrow and the next day. We're supposed to pray until the period, until the last clod of earth on our grave. Marzutra said, let mitzvah, you should find, what are the pious praying about? That they should find a restroom. What's the idea? Amri b'marava in the West, they said, had marzutra adifa mekulu. Marzutra's is the best understanding. Why? Because in ancient times, they didn't have bathrooms in their homes. So they had to go find a bathroom to go to the bathroom. And the Gemara says sometimes it was so difficult that they waited a long time. And they waited so long till they got to the bathroom. The Gemara says that some people would become eunuchs from containing themselves. The Gemara says that's why if a person has to contain himself from urinating, he shouldn't contain himself. Even if he's in the marketplace and he has to make it and it's public, the Gemara says that don't wait because we don't want you becoming a eunuch. So think about it. In their days, until you found a public bathroom, wasn't so easy. So some places where they lived, they had bathrooms, they had good sewage systems. Other places, you'd have to travel out into the fields and go a distance. So they said, this is what the verse is talking about, that you should live in an area where there are bathrooms readily available. And they, in Babylon, they had a problem that whenever they tried to dig, Babylon had a lot of water underground. And whenever you dig, water would come up. So they had no place that they could make a bathroom. They'd dig many, many holes before they found a hole that remained the hole without filling up with water. So they said that this is Marzutra's really is a very important chant because people underestimate how difficult life can be if you can't find bathrooms readily. Try living 5 people in an apartment with 1 bathroom and you start appreciating what Marzutra was talking about. Okay, so we're going to pause here and go over to the other Gemara.